This is Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Joe George, Brian McDonald, and Ryan here with you today until 6. Branham will be back on 6 on Monday on Twitter, at Jeremy Branham. Do it for him.
You want to hit his TikTok as well?
Jeremy J. Branham. Jeremy J. Branham.
Yeah.
That's confusing.
He's an influencer, you know.
He is an influencer.
He'll tell us that.
You can find me everywhere at Joe George Radio, at Sack by BMAC for Brian. Quick injury report update from the Houston Texans that came out today. Did not participate in practice today. Derek Stingley Jr. with his oblique injury. Jacob Johnson, the fullback, with a hamstring. Titus Howard did not participate. He has an illness. It's not too concerning. Limited participation for Jake Andrews and Nico Collins. Apparently, Legarius Sneed met with the media today in the Titans locker room, and when he was asked about Nico Collins, he said, "Who?" And then they followed up Nico Collins, and he said, "Who?"
Wow.
So,
no respect for Nico. Now,
well, I like it. You got to give me something spicy about this game to make us care.
God, yes. Please give this game some juice.
Yeah, give me a fight.
Some bulletin board material. I'll kill for it.
Like, give me some helmet throws.
It's a little disrespectful from Sneed, but like,
he's pretty good, so he's just kind of.
But not only is he pretty good, but like, if he's just looking at the stats this year, like, who's kind of fair?
Yeah, I mean, the offense sucks.
Yeah, maybe it's not a Nico Collins who, it's a Texans offense who.
Yeah,
that means them boys are tightened up.
Thank you, Ryan.
I don't think I've heard that one before.
You've never heard that one? Yeah, that one gets you, of the three drops I have for the other teams, the AFC South, that one definitely gets used the least because Duval and Go Colts is so much funnier.
Yes.
But, it exists.
All right, the Texans offense is abysmal.
Dumpster fire?
They are in the bottom of virtually every category, and we're going to play a little game here in a second, but I was thinking about, Jeremy and I were talking about this yesterday, and the one stat that really concerns me the most with this team is just the four red zone attempts. In three games, you're 0 for 4, so you're last in the NFL because you have 0%. But like, in a weird way, I'd be more satisfied if they were like 0 for 12, because at least they'd have 12 attempts.
Ooh, like, that's an interesting question.
But like, I just like to have such little opportunity to even be in position to score. And I think the Nico fumble and the Dari fumble both stopped them from being put into the red zone. So you could have had 6, but still, I mean, you have teams going to the red zone 4, 5, 6 times a game right now. Like, if you watched the Lions and the Ravens game on Monday, they had a ton of red zone opportunities.
Such a good game.
It was a great game. So there's just such a little opportunity for the Texans. That, to me, is of everything. And it's all bad, and we're about to go through it, but the fact that you can't even get down the field and put yourself in a position for a Kymie Fairbairn field goal, a short field goal.
And then he even misses one against the Jaguars.
It was a bad snap.
Yeah, okay.
Jeremy watched the all 22.
Oh, he's posturing and looking at film?
Yeah, he's saying that it's just not the same without Weeks there. It was a couple bad snaps.
that's the take I would expect from Jeremy. I think obviously it's part of what we do, like pointing fingers, playing the blame game. That's part of what we do here in sports radio. But really, I think it's kind of with the Texans' offense right now, it's so bad that there's no one person to blame. I mean, Dare's fumbled, Nico's fumbled, the running back sucked, the offensive line sucks, CJ's running backwards instead of stepping up and evading in the pocket, he's been inaccurate, the offensive coordinator sucks, some of D'Amico's game management decisions have sucked. Like, there's no one thing I can point to that has gone well for the Texans' offense. There's not a single thing.
No, I mean,
so there seems to be like two camps right now. People have kind of moved on from the offensive line temporarily. It's either blame Nick Cayley or blame CJ Stroud. I think what they're missing is blame everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It took a lot to snowball in one direction to get to an offense this bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's collectively bad. It is the offensive line. It's Ariante Arisuri getting crushed.
Oh, he's been so bad.
By Joshua Hines Allen. I just want to call him a ketchup bottle every time I hear it.
It's kind of a dad joke there, Joe.
I know it is, but every time I hear his name, I'm like, oh, he's named after ketchup. It's just, he's not been good. I've been saying all week, like, I think they should start Cam Robinson at left tackle this week. Now, we'll see what Titus Howard
can do. The guy that Ursary beat out for a job?
But Cam Robinson, but he was better.
He was better in week one.
He had the job. He was better in week one. And, like, I think it's more of a reflection that Ursary can't play right tackle. Of why Cam Robinson's not in. Because I think their original plan in training camp was what they intended, which was have Cam Robinson at left tackle, have Titus Howard at left guard or right guard, Ingram at the other one, Andrews at center, and Ursary at right tackle. I think that was their plan. But then Ariante could not play right tackle. Cam Robinson got hurt. When he got hurt, he played better at left tackle. And they moved Titus back outside. So I don't think this is like what they intended with this group. And it doesn't help that Nick Caserio is arrogant. And so is D'Amico Ryans. And like, if you don't know what we're talking about, it's this, this offseason, there was a season ticket event at NRG. And, you know, if you had season tickets, you could go to it. And Nick Caserio said that he's not worried about the offensive line. And
words that will live in infamy if this continues to go the way it does.
I don't know why you say it when it's like.
Because he come. Look, I like. This is a conversation we had in the bullpen this last Saturday. But I like 95-99% of what Nick Caserio does. But the moments he chooses to be smug and the hills he decides to die on are truly puzzling to me.
It is.
I mean, in the past, we've heard that he doesn't know what a window is. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you dying on the, you know what a window is. You're a sports fan. Even if you don't agree that we can only win inside a 2 or 3 year window, to come off to the media saying, I don't know what a window is, or then obviously the big one this last offseason was, I don't know what drafting for need is. You're just coming off as smug and arrogant and unnecessarily combative.
Yep,
and again, it's a weird hill to die on, and obviously he died on the hill of, well, if we're D'Amico and I aren't worried about the offensive line, neither should you.
All right, you got a little game for us.
Yeah, so Ryan, let's play a game.
I want to play a game.
So to great illustrate, movie. Yeah, well, which one? There's so many.
All of them?
Most of them. I didn't like the Chris Rock one as much.
Oh, I don't think I saw that one.
Actually. Yeah, Spiral, I think it was called. Yeah, it was kind of an offshoot, but the last one I liked. Anyway, so I wanted to highlight how bad the 2025 Texans offense is performed by playing a little game and asking you who's worse, the 2025 Texans offense, and I'll go through different stats, or the 2002 Texans offense, the first year ever in franchise history Texans with David Carr under center. So we'll start off with yards per play. Joe, who was worse in yards per play, the 2025 Texans offense or the 2002 Texans offense?
I'm going to go 2002 in this one.
2002 was worse. You're correct. They were 3.8 yards per play. Texans actually decently ahead. Still not good, but 5 yards per play.
Okay.
5 yards per play. Now, some of that is going to get lost in the translation of offenses becoming quicker and quicker and more plays and everything. But still, Texans offense this year, pretty considerably better. Yards per rush.
This team.
This team is actually better. They're at 4.4, which was surprising to me. I thought Nick Chubb would have dragged them down, but I think some of CJ's runs have boosted it up.
I mean, they both were at 4. I think both Marks and Chubb were at like 4.8 or 4.5 this weekend.
Yeah, and so the Texans rush in 2002 was so bad. They were 3.2 yards per carry.
Gosh, that's awful.
3.2 for a full season.
And think about the context of that. That's when running the ball was
important.
Was important.
Yeah, it was like, I mean, they had nobody running. They had a running back who decided to be a rapper like halfway through the season and a rookie in Jonathan Wells. So they didn't have a lot, but still 3.2 was horrible. All right, so the time of possession per drive. I know that's the wording is a little different there, but basically per possession, how long are you holding the football?
I'm going to say this team is worse.
It's close. This team is better. But it's close, right? 2002, again, rookie David Carr, terrible offense, team in their first ever season. They averaged 2 minutes and 14 seconds per possession. This year's team, 2 minutes and 35 seconds. So it kind of feels like a marginal difference.
God, that's pathetic.
It's like one play, basically like one play better.
Yeah, I just assumed David Carr was getting sacked on 2 out of every 3
plays.
Well,
it's like 76. Yeah, 76. All right, first downs per game.
2022 is better.
2025?
Or 2002 is better.
2002 was better. Yeah, 2002. The Texans offense it was 14-13.
Jeez.
Yeah, first downs per game. So pretty interesting there. Now, you're going to know this one right away, but red zone percentage.
Oh, well, this seems worse because it's 0%.
Yeah, the Texans offense in 2002, 41.7 was their red zone percentage. The Texans this year, 0.
It wouldn't be hard because you get your next one, you're at, 20%? So if you score on your next red zone appearance.
All right, one final one. I'll go to the big one. Points per game.
Oh, they're better. 2002.
2002 was, in fact, better. 2002, they averaged 13.31 points per game. Again, David Carr, Jabbar Gaffney,
this seems at
Johnson Wells. They averaged 13.3 points per game. This year's team is averaging 12.6. So, like, more than half a point worse per game so far through three games in the 2002 offense.
Yeah, it has been – it's brutal.
Like, I had that conversation with some buddies. Like, is this – this year's offense, to me, like, if you exclude years where they're tanking, 21 and 22, if you exclude the year Deshaun Watson tears his ACL after six games, because those are obvious, you know, fair throw it out the window because they weren't, you know, they weren't in a position to do better. But if you throw out those three seasons, like, this is the most boring, unwatchable offense I've seen since David Carr.
Yeah, we just got a text here. See if I can find it. From 2460, I've been watching NFL Red Zone and haven't seen the Texans. Yeah.
Well, they've only been there four times in three games.
Yeah, and the thing is the defense is also pretty good, so you're not really seeing the other side of it either. Let's see. From the 3955, it says, please look at this. Okay.
Are you clicking on a link?
I clicked on a photo.
Okay. I was worried that you might have clicked on a link and got a virus.
Well, this is just where things are. Look, there's a lot of things you can – some is cherry picking, some is not. Anthony Richardson, first career 15 starts. 8-7 record, 21 total touchdowns, 13 interceptions. C.J. Stroud has last 15 starts.
Oh, no.
6-9, 15 total touchdowns, 12 interceptions.
Yeah, and he hasn't thrown for 300 yards since week 5 against Buffalo last season.
Yeah, it's very bad. Texter asks, typically we don't do this, but I'll answer this one. We're trying to not do this anymore. From the 8022, Joe, what's it like following / cheering for a bad team as a fan and covering a bad team for work? Look, last weekend...
The Bears have looked better than the Texans have at any point this year. So.
Thank you for saying that. I didn't have to say it. Last weekend, or two weeks ago, when Notre Dame lost to A&M, and then the Texans lost to and the Bears lost 52-21 to the Lions, and then I was at the Monday night game, was like the worst weekend of football I've ever watched.
So that's all in a what, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, a three-day span you had to deal with that?
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, that not collapse against A&M, but it was a back and forth.
My response to that is it makes me question everything.
About what you're doing as a sports fan?
My life?
Should I get into sales?
Yeah, there's times where watching these teams that I watch on a regular basis, both here and from there, is exhausting. And it is just it is
especially since you have to
painful
as someone who does post game shows for the Cubs and the Bears and the Irish, like you have to consume so much more than if you were just covering Houston teams.
And that's where like the reason why like people like when they question like if I'm all in on the Houston teams at times, it's like, no, they've brought me joy. They've brought me joy because the Astros have been good, the Texans have been good, the Rockets are getting good. I don't typically experience those things. So watching the Texans this year, I mean, it's an eyesore.
When's the last time you felt joy as a Bears fan?
Oh, that's a great question. Probably Sunday. Before that.
Okay. Besides that, I'm talking about like a more of a big picture than individual game.
I don't know. Bill Lazor was probably the offensive coordinator.
Did you feel joy during the Jay Cutler years?
No, probably.
They got to an NFC Championship game.
2018 until the double doink was like the last time I felt joy. It's been a minute. But this team, the Texans, I mean, they're a hard watch. Like, that's the thing too, is like if they were 0-3 and the defense was good but giving up some points and the offense was moving the ball and getting into the red zone, and like there was like they're 0-3, but the games were like, okay, they've been good watches on television. These games have not been good. Like in viewing experiences, they've been dreadful to watch. I mean, this Sunday has the potential to be one of the worst football games we've ever watched because the Titans are trash. And frankly, the Texans are not much better, specifically on offense right now.
The Texans could win this game 10-3. I think that's well within the realm of possibility.
I think if the Texans are going to cover, I said this yesterday, that they're going to have to score a defensive touchdown.
Is it still 7?
I think it's at 6.5 right now.
6.5?
Yeah. It's a lot of really bad football this week.
It is. Like, I mean, you make that point about being watchable. Like, the six games that Sean Watson played in 2017, like, they went 3-3. It wasn't like they were winning all those games. But even losses, you know, at Seattle, at New England, those games were, you know, the team was scoring in the 30s. And even though they lost, it felt like you didn't at least waste 3 hours of your life watching a team play. Like, watching Texans-Jaguars this last weekend, and I have no faith that Texans-Titans will be any better on Sunday, really did feel like I just wasted three. Like, I wanted to go into the other room and apologize to my wife for not spending the last 3 hours with her. It was that bad of a brand of football.
Yeah, it was.
It was unwatchable.
Yeah, it was unwatchable, and maybe this weekend will be a little bit better. Speaking of that.
That feels way more optimistic than I am, Joe.
Yeah, speaking of that, there's a lot of people who, if there's, you know, they're looking at the Houston Texans and they're saying this team's going to make a playoff run, you're going to call that person a homer. You're going to call that person blind. In the next segment, we're going to hear from someone that gets paid to talk about it on television, that thinks the Houston Texans are going to make the playoffs this year. It's Joe and Jeremy, but Joe and Brian in for Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Joe George and Brian McDonald with Ryan producing here with you today. Jeremy will return on Monday. All right, we're going to combo two things here a little bit, actually. We're going to talk about a take we heard, and then we're going to start to also go through the 3-0 teams, the 0-3 teams, and the 1-2 teams, because as a texter points out here, 0794, think of it like this. If the Texans win against the Titans, they'll have the same record as the loser of Ravens against Chiefs. That's true.
That feels like something a coach would say in a press conference. I just kept waiting. Like, if the Chiefs had lost that game, there would certainly have been, well, the Chiefs are also 0-3. Yeah. D'Amico would 100% said that.
He would have, and he might say it this week when they are 1-3, and so are the Chiefs or the Ravens. All right. I was scrolling through Twitter this morning, and I don't really follow this show a lot, but Ryan Fitzpatrick and Andrew Whitworth do a podcast. And I saw the headline, and it shocked me. Here is a take from Ryan Fitzpatrick about the Houston Texans.
I think the 0-3 Houston Texans will still make the playoffs this year.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah. Their offense can't get any worse. There's nowhere to go but up. Their defense is still elite. Nico Collins is heating up. I can't imagine that C.J. Stroud is not going to get this thing headed in the right direction.
Okay.
Can I start off with saying something that I hate when people say? I hate when people say, well, it can't get any worse.
Well, the Texans are saying that. That's what Tim Settle is saying. That's what other guys in the locker room are saying. Is you can only go up from here.
Then they've already lost. Like, that's kind of my mindset when I hear that. Like, one, it can get worse. I mean, you've had four red zone trips. I mean, just a matter of fact, you could have no red zone trips. Like, it can get worse. And even if it can't get worse, okay, you could say the same, and saying the same is the worst offense, or, you know, bottom three offense in the league.
Yeah, and you can also expect your defense to not hold up in the way that they have so far.
Yeah, they've given up 17 points a game. What if they start giving up? Maybe you improve a little bit, but now they're giving up 22 points per game.
Yeah,
it'd still be a good defense, but it doesn't matter when lost.
Yeah, are you going to score on average over 20 points a game with this offense?
No.
I don't think so. For the Texans, but let's entertain this for all the time it's worth. For bleeps and giggles. Because I almost said the real thing.
I love Ryan Fitzpatrick, but this is a wild take.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew Whitworth with the oh boy is very fair. We might need to pull the oh boy.
Yeah, that is a good drop, yeah.
So if you want to be on the side of Ryan Fitzpatrick, how do the Houston Texans make the playoffs this year? You want to be the ultimate? It's not even glass half full. Your glass is still totally full if you believe that this is the case, which for Ryan Fitzpatrick it is. I think it's a crazy take. I think the season is over. If the Houston Texans are going to make the playoffs this year, I think it starts with what we're seeing in the NFL has to play out and really continue, which is that the AFC East will have one playoff representative. They will not have a wild card representative. In the AFC North, Baltimore will eventually go way past Cincinnati and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh will float around right around 500. That'll be important here. But without Joe Burrow, the Bengals will fall apart. The Indianapolis Colts will run away with the division. So you have three clear division winners and then a potential wild card team in the Pittsburgh Steelers. And then in the West, you need the Chargers to run away with the West. And I think you need the Broncos and the Chiefs, who are both 1-2 in the moment, to continue to struggle in the way that they have. They have neither team has looked good. They both have a plus 4-point score differential. this season, so they're not exactly crushing it offensively or defensively, the Broncos are, or the Chiefs. So if the Texans were going to make the playoffs, to me, the only path in is going to be a wild card spot. I'm going to assume that someone out of the West and the North is going to claim one of the wild card spots. Let's say it's the Pittsburgh Steelers. Let's say it's the Chiefs. That means there's one wild card spot left of teams like New England, the Jets, the Dolphins, the Bengals, the Browns, all of the South outside of the Colts, and then the Raiders and the Broncos. Like, can you pass those teams? All your records are pretty close outside of right now Jacksonville and Cincinnati. So is there a path? I think there is. But realistically, for the Texans to go, let's say 9-8 gets them in the playoffs, which means they can only lose five more games.
That's the point I was going
to
make.
They can only lose five more games.
They have to go 9-5 down the stretch.
Okay. Those division,
not even the stretch, just the rest of the year.
Those division winners that we just crowned as like they're going to be a playoff team, right? Okay, the Chargers, that's your fourth loss of the season. We're going kind of in reverse here a little bit. The Bills, that's your fifth loss of the season. The Ravens, that's your sixth loss of the season. So if the rest of your schedule outside of the Ravens, Bills, and Chargers, you have a two-game window to only lose two games. Best case scenario, you split with the Colts. That puts you at seven losses on the season already. If you just lose one game to the Colts, one game to the Chargers, one game to the Ravens and the Bills, that puts you at seven losses on the season. That means you have to win every single football game, basically, outside of that. You have to beat the 49ers, who are undefeated right now. You have to beat, and they'll have Brock Purdy back.
You have to win in Seattle.
You have to win in Seattle. You have to beat that Denver Broncos team. That game is a must-win game if the Texans have a chance. You have to beat the Colts once. Even if it's the last week of the season and the Colts are sitting their guys. You have to beat the Kansas City Chiefs to get to 9-8 this year. Like, the Texans' path to making it is feels virtually impossible because of their first-place schedule. Because the teams that are on it this year, we said before the season, the schedule was tough. I don't think when you look at the Texans' schedule and the way it played out, it was unrealistic to say they're going to be 2-2 going into the Ravens game and potentially 2-3 going into the bye. I think that's what we've all would have expected. But instead, they're going to be 1-4 at best.
And I think they will be 1-4. I think they beat the Titans. I'm not as if, you know, not saying that's even a bold statement because the Titans are just trash. But you laid out the math. Like, it's not even really about, well, can they improve? Can they do this? Can they do that? It's just the math of it. They have to get to at least 9 wins. And let's be honest, 9 wins is not even a guarantee. In a lot of years, it takes 10 wins. So, but let's just play out the scenario where 9 wins is enough. And you look down the remainder of their schedule, like, can they get to 9 wins? Or can they avoid getting to more than 8 losses? They already have 3. They're going to play at the Ravens. To me, that's 4. You got Seattle, the 49ers, and Broncos. I think, you know, at best you go 2-1 there, and even that feels like a stretch. Then you still have to. You have the Bills. You have a game at the Colts, at the Chiefs. I don't really believe in the Cardinals, but they're 3-0. You have to go to the Chargers. Like, there's too many like teams that you would pick to beat the Texans remaining on their schedule to add up to a win-loss record that would get them in the playoffs.
Yeah, in the last 3 years in the AFC and the NFC combined, there have been, outside of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers who won the South at 8-9, there have been 5 wild card teams in the last 3 years that made the playoffs in this expanded format below 500. That's it. Last year, there was not a single one. The worst team to make the playoffs.
Wait, 8-9 was below 500?
But they won the South.
So have there been wild card teams not in the expanded format that have made it at 8-9?
Not in the last 3 years.
Yeah. Okay.
Did they go back to when did they make this change? Was that 2021?
I think this is the 4th season of the expanded format.
Yeah. So it looks like
it'd be 3 years of history.
There has not been a below 500.
So the lowest
team.
One is 9-8.
Yeah. In a wild card spot. Again,
yeah. In a wild card spot. Expanded, yes. That's what we're talking about here.
So, I mean, in 2022, the Dolphins made the playoffs at 9-8. The Giants made it at 9-7-1. The Seahawks made it at 9-8. In 2023, you had no team in the AFC. In the NFC, it was just the Green Bay Packers at 9-8. And again, in 2024, there was not a single team that made the playoffs with less than 10 wins. So for the Texans to make the playoffs, you need to see what we've seen so far in the AFC, which frankly hasn't been a lot of good football. Like, there's been a lot of teams where, like, no one thinks the Patriots, Jets, or Dolphins are going to make a run. No one really believes in the Bengals without Joe Burrow or the Joe Flacco, Dylan Gabriel, Shador Sanders-led Browns. Steelers are 2-1, like they're always around 500. I don't think anyone believes Jacksonville is going to be an above 500 football team.
No, they were also garbage on Sunday.
The Raiders, no. The Broncos and the Chiefs, who are both 1-2 right now,
they could both make the play. Obviously with the Chiefs, but I think the Broncos could still turn around.
Yeah, I do not see it. Like, they have to go 4-2 in the division at this point now because you've already lost one game. And really, your best bet is to. I think the only way for the Texans to honestly make the playoffs is if Daniel Jones gets hurt this weekend.
Go Texans.
I mean, even then, they already have a 3-game lead.
I know, but Anthony Richardson's awful.
Can we agree that the Texans cannot get to 10 wins?
I don't think they can.
So, I mean, the Colts, to get to 10 wins, would have to go, what would that math be? 10-4? Or, sorry, 7-4 down the stretch?
Yeah.
It's not that. I mean, I guess if Indiana Jones gets hurt, then 7-4 would be a real stretch because Anthony Richardson is pretty garbage. But, that's the problem. The division's already over. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Colts maybe the shoe drops a little bit with Daniel Jones. He's not going to play as well as he's played so far through three games, but all they have to do is go 7-4 to get to 10-7, and the division's a wrap.
From 4-1-3-3, more likely to make the playoffs this season, the Astros or Texans?
Astros.
The Astros. They're a game back. They're two games back right now. I know there's five games left in the season, but, I would bet way more money in the Astros making the playoffs than the Texans.
And I don't
think
either one will make it, if I'm being quite honest. Mm-hmm. But I would 100% bet more on the Astros to make the playoffs. Just because we can go down the schedule, but I mean, the point where they're at, they can only afford five more losses. And Ravens, Seahawks, Niners, Broncos, Bills, at Colts, Chiefs, Chargers. I counted out 8 probable losses, and they can afford 5.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe they just magically take a pill and start playing better, but the math doesn't math at this point for them to make the playoffs.
And they've shown nothing to do that. 7212 says, absolutely wild take, but if they're going to make the playoffs, they need to win games. That would help. Agreed.
I mean, that is the simplified version of what Joe said, yes.
6171, the real question is, do you think they can go 8-4 after losing to the Ravens and hopefully beating the Titans?
No. They're the bottom three offense. Why? No.
8649, this team has a better chance of going winless than making the playoffs. What on earth gives y'all the feeling? Well, it's Ryan Fitzpatrick thinks they still have a chance to make the playoffs.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, Joe and I are on record as saying they will not make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Okay, answer that question. Better chance they go winless or better chance they make the playoffs?
Better chance they make the playoffs.
Yeah, I'll agree. They still get they're going to get a win this Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm going to mark it down as a guaranteed victory even if there is an injury at quarterback.
Yeah, Ryan Fitzpatrick, I don't know what he's on, but to watch the Texans the first three games, even to say that Nico Collins is heating up, I think it's far-fetched, and it's not like he's been the problem really for the Houston Texans, but
it was a busted coverage.
For him to heat up, the quarterback has to get him the ball, and that's not really happening. So I don't agree with Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you don't either in any way, shape, or form, that the Houston Texans have a shot to make the playoffs.
Let me move the bar a little bit because the Texans get a win this Sunday, and so they're not going to go winless. More likely, they make the playoffs. Or just like Lovie Smith did in his one season as Texans head coach, win 4 games only.
4 games.
Yeah, I would agree.
I mean, it's honestly, and it might be, Jeremy and I have talked about this a little bit this week, and I think we'll have to have this discussion throughout the year, is maybe it's just better for the Houston Texans organization just to only be a 4-win team, to get a franchise, to try and get a franchise left tackle in the draft. They can attempt to do that. I don't know if I trust Nick Cassero, even with a top-5 pick.
That's the thing. As long as the same decision makers are in charge, you can give them all the toys and assets to use in an attempt to fix this. But if the same people who screwed it up are making the decisions in the attempt to rebuild, why would you think they would get it right the second time around, or the third or fourth time around?
All right, let's go through our game balls next. Who are we giving out game balls to from this weekend? We'll get to that next year on Jeremy and Joe with BMAC filling in and Ryan behind the glass on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. October 25th and October 26th will be the first time we return to ESPN Bet inside Le Bourget in Lake Charles. They got an all-new chef, a new VIP fan cave section that's available for bookings, new menu items. It's also now available to all ages. So if you have someone with you, it's not 21. You used to have to be 21 to get into the sports book. Now you can go in just kind of like a normal restaurant. You can't bet, obviously, but you can go in there and watch all the NFL games, all the college football games. I mean, we were looking at the schedule before the show to see which games are going to be up there that weekend. The weekends were up there. It's going to be incredible. We're going up there for the conference championship weekend in college football. We're going to be up there for the first round of the college football playoffs. It's going to be an incredible environment. If you like the Red River, I highly recommend going in a couple weeks, even though Oklahoma looks a little bit different potentially for that game, but it's absolutely an awesome place to go in bet. I cannot recommend it enough. The food's incredible. The environment's good. All the TVs that are there for you. And honestly, I love going to Le Bourget. It's not just for the sportsbook inside ESPN Bet. All the different things that you can, all the different restaurants you can go to, the casino, great. All of it is fantastic. Must be 21 plus to bet. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700.
Houston's only FM sports stations. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Listening to Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
All right, Joe George, Brian McDonald here with you today. Jeremy Branham returns on Monday here on Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Let's get to our game balls from week three in the NFL. Want to start us off today, BM?
Sure. Someone making their NFL... their NFL debut, not just 2025 debut, but Quinshon Judkins for the Browns. Mm-hmm. And would you say the most surprising win of the year so far?
Definitely.
I mean, it's got to be, right? Who in the world? I'm sure a lot of people lost their Survivor team when the Packers lost to the Browns. Although I would say never pick a road team when you're picking Survivor. I think that's a common mistake people mm-hmm. make. Never pick a road team. But Quinshon Judkins against the Packers, who just completely shut down everybody so far this season, goes 18 for 94 and a touchdown in his NFL debut.
Yeah, he was very good for them in that game. I'm going to start with Isaiah Rodgers of the Minnesota Vikings. Pick six, fumble recovery for a touchdown in the first half, two forced fumbles, and a forced incompletion. This kid was everywhere. Taking advantage of Browning a little bit, but like he was all over the place for the Vikings. I think he ended up with a 99.9 Pro Football Focus rating.
I didn't know that was possible. I guess technically it's possible. I didn't know it was, though.
Yeah, that's the perfect. So he is the first player in NFL history with a pick six and a fumble return for a touchdown and two forced fumbles in a single game. He did it in one half.
That's incredible. That feels like that should have been, like, if we were to rank our game balls, that feels like that should be the guy at the very top of the list.
Yeah, I'm sure you want NFC defensive player.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I don't usually pay attention to those sort of things, but he had to have. I'll give my next game ball to someone else on the Vikings. That being Jordan Mason. Doesn't matter if Aaron Jones is out, because he goes 16 for 116 and two touchdowns. Everyone who's been stashing Jordan Mason in fantasy is rejoicing, because with Aaron Jones out for the next, what, three, 4 weeks? Like, they've got maybe even RB1 for that time period. And I think no worse than RB2, even after Aaron Jones comes back.
Got to go with Baker Mayfield again.
Yeah, he was on my list.
Third straight game, which his team is down and needs a score with less than a minute left to go. And he has the ball in his hands, and he takes him down there and wins it. And we were going over our Super Bowl contenders. I said yes. The counter to that was, well, they struggled to beat the Falcons, the Texans, and the Jets. But when your quarterback can get you game-winning touchdowns or game-winning field goals with 47 seconds, 6 seconds, and 0 seconds left on the clock, you have something special in him. And that's what Baker Mayfield's doing right now, just to put his team in that position. And, I mean, we'll see how it looks this week versus the Eagles without Mike Evans, without Chris Godwin. I mean, Emeka Ebuka is now going to be the number one target by far, but he is just been incredible through three games.
Yeah, I'll give my next game ball to someone else who was a quarterback pick near the top of the draft that has had to bounce around a lot over his NFL career. And that's Marcus Mariota. And the Commanders convincing blowout win goes 207-1 through the air, plus 40 yards and a score on the ground. Scored throwing, scored passing, was efficient with the ball, and the Commanders blew him out. That was an impressive game for Mariota. He even found Terry McLaurin, which Jaden Daniels is having trouble doing.
I'm going to go with Jordan Davis, the Eagles defensive lineman,
yeah,
blocking the field goal.
One of the many Georgia defenders they have.
That was maybe the craziest amount of, or the craziest red zone witching hour I've ever seen.
Yeah, was there three block kicks?
So there's a Jets one that they then scored on,
And
then Baker took him back down the field.
Right,
to get the game-winning field goal. You have the Eagles one that is the, I mean, it's got to be, if you were betting on this game and you had the Rams plus 3.5.
Oh, other side.
And you lost because Davis blocks the field goal and then takes it to the house, and you lost that wager.
Yeah.
I mean, that is one of the worst.
Do you ever gamble again?
Probably not. Like,
are we still calling it two favorites?
No,
dog?
We have to.
Like, I, Branham won't stop harping on that. Pick three, then maybe that's what it is. But I had the Eagles covering in that game, so or maybe that was the bullpen picks. So one of those two, I had the Eagles covering, and certainly did not think I was going to get that when they were down, felt like 10 most of the game, and then suddenly out of nowhere. I mean, I'm just glad he picked it up and ran it. It feels like a really crappy cover and a cover I didn't deserve, but I will take it.
Oh, what you got next?
I'll stick with the Eagles because this is a selfish one for me. This guy hasn't done anything for my most important fantasy team all year, but A.J. Brown finally had himself an A.J. Brown game. 6 for 109 and a touchdown. Finally got in the end zone and connected with Hurts. Devonta Smith also had a touchdown in that game, but it was really, I'm excited about the six part of that stat line because he was only getting one target in some of these early games before that. So to end up with 6 for 109 and a touchdown was promising for A.J. Brown.
I'll go Justin Herbert for mine. Only 300 yards on the game, 28 of 47, so a lot of pass attempts in this one. But he only threw one touchdown, but it was huge. I mean, that the throw he had was incredible. What they've done to unlock Keenan Allen again, 7 catches for 65 yards. Quentin Johnston, 6 catches for 89. I mean, Ladd McConkey, who everyone thought was going to be like the wide receiver one there for the Chargers this year. They are spreading the ball around, and Justin Herbert has really, through three games, has shifted the narrative a bit again about him being back in that conversation of a top five quarterback in this league. He has been phenomenal.
Is he in the MVP conversation?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. I was curious where you would land on that. Yeah, I had Keenan on my list, but I'll move to someone else. And I'll save my Bears pick. I'll just leave you.
I'm not doing it.
You're not going to do it?
Nope, I'm not doing it anymore.
You're not doing a Bear?
No, Vito.
Vito? Okay. Can I mention a Bear?
Yeah, you can, yeah.
I mean, Luther Burden, 103 in a score? He had several big plays. Not only the long touchdown, but another like 25-ish yarder play to get them in scoring position. Luther Burden, it remains to be seen if this was just, you know, a one-off or this is a sign of the, like, a more consistent break. I think
it's a sign of things to come.
I mean, okay, I'll defer to you on this, ultimate Bears fan. Obviously, you watch them more than I do, but it still feels like he's third in the pecking order behind Rome and DJ. You think that's changing?
I think DJ Moore won't be on the Bears by the end of the season.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm glad I picked up Luther Burden in my money league.
Jonathan Taylor, 17 carries, 102 yards, three touchdowns. He has been a monster
so
far this year in the NFL. He's already rushed for 338 yards on the season on just 60 carries. But another game in which, this is where, while I struggle to believe in the Daniel Jones hype, even though they're 3-0, what they're getting from everything around him, the weapons on the outside, Taylor, the defense, they're rolling right now. They're playing really good football. So Jonathan Taylor probably deserves to be in the MVP conversation himself. Honestly.
Yeah, I'll throw one more out there. Jackson Smith and Jigba has been so good. I mean, he's been so consistent for the Seahawks this year. But their latest game, which was just an absolute blowout at home over the Saints, goes 5 for 96 and a touchdown. Really probably could have done more, but the game was over so quick that they didn't really need him to. But JSN has really emerged to a point where I'm sure Seahawks fans are really not even upset DK Metcalf is gone.
All right, when we get back here, let's go through the 3-0 teams, the 0-3 teams, where the Texans fit into that, the 1-2 teams, because there's some really interesting ones out there, where the panic meter should be on these teams. We'll get to that next year on Jeremy and Joe with Brian filling in alongside me, Joe George, on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. We're back with Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5
inside of the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
All right, Joe and Brian here today as Jeremy is out. He'll return on Monday here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. All right, let's talk about some of these 3-0 teams, 0-3 teams, 1-2 teams. So, BMAC, you got some teams, some panic questions.
Yeah, I mean, let's you want to start with that instead of the ranking our 3-0 teams?
Yeah, we can do that.
All right, so I mean, let's start because this is actually I was looking on the main page of the NFL page for CBS Sports, and like right at the top was panic for the Chiefs. So let's start there. They get the win against the Giants on Monday Night Football, an ugly game that shouldn't have been on Monday Night Football. That was a travesty onto itself. I would call it an unimpressive win, although Troy Aikman, I don't know if you thought the same thing, Troy Aikman and Joe Buck were trying so hard to sell the idea of the Chiefs really figured it out in the second half, and this is classic Chiefs. It's like, no, they were still pretty average. I mean, they moved the ball a little bit better. At least they scored a touchdown on, like, you know, the first half, which was, I think, 9-6, only field goals scored in that game. But what is your panic level with the Chiefs?
For me, it's like a... I'm at like a 6. I know Xavier Worthy is a full participant in practice again today, which is positive for them. I'm just not as, you know, bought in on Rice and Worthy as everyone else because they haven't really produced at a high level in the NFL. They're good names. You know, they were good fantasy targets in theory. They were all those things. But I'm not all in on those guys coming back and like fixing their problems. Frankly, so I'm at like a 6.
Yeah, because I mean, this is kind of the latest example of what's been a kind of a slow decline over the last couple of years, right? They've tried to fix it with what Sky Moore was a second round pick they made. I'm trying to remember some of the other wide receivers they tried to throw into it, but they've got kind of like what it feels like until Rashee Rice returns, which he still obviously will be out for 3 more games after what they've already played, that it feels like they have a collection of number 3 wide receivers. And I mean, Patrick Mahomes is, you know, the best quarterback of his generation, but like there's even limits to what a guy like that can elevate. And I just don't think running out a collection of wide receiver 3s, an aging tight end, and a bunch of nobodies at running back, because I don't believe in Pacheco or this version of Kareem Hunt. Like, there's a limit to what Patrick Mahomes can elevate, or and Andy Reid can elevate. So I'm about where you're at. Like, I still think I'd probably put myself as I'm going to go 4.5 because I still think they're going to make the playoffs. So if the panic is, will they miss the playoffs? No, I don't think they'll miss the playoffs. But I think there's a real danger this team could be like 10-7 and then 1-done in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they're in a very similar spot. I don't think it's going to fall apart necessarily in the way it has for the Astros, but I just think where those windows are shutting pretty quickly. I think they're in a very similar
track. It does feel like
track.
The window is shutting, yeah.
Yeah,
I agree.
At least for now. And the Chiefs can reopen that.
Yeah, they can reopen it by drafting well or making a big move in free agency. It just feels like they maybe got too comfortable that, well, we got Patrick Mahomes, he'll fix everything. Mm-hmm. Like, well, there's going to be a limit to that at some point. All right, next team. This team cannot stop anybody through the air. The Dallas Cowboys, 1-2 start.
10.
Yeah.
Their season's over.
The CD injury could change things. Maybe I'll agree with you. I don't know what to say. I don't want to say their season's over yet, because if CD does, do we know how long he's expected to be out?
No, but they're looking at injured reserve.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind. Season's over for them. Because I was about to say, if he was going to be back quickly, they could maybe outscore their way to, you know, a 9-8 record. But
can they?
I said... They could.
I mean, like
they could. I mean, I don't think they. No, I'm with
they
you.
They scored 14 points this weekend against a defense that gave up 52 the week before.
No, it's not good. No, I'm definitely taking a very optimistic side, which is crazy. I don't even like the Cowboys. But I just believed in the offensive side of what they have enough if CeeDee was healthy. But obviously, if they're talking about him going to IR, then yeah, season's over. So I'll go slightly less than you, but I'll go 9. But yeah, the panic meter there is pretty high. All right, let's go over to the AFC. We talked about a couple of we did talk about the Chiefs at the front, but if where's your panic meter right now? Let's talk about one of the teams that was a Super Bowl favorite. It's faced 3 really good teams, so you might excuse away their 2 losses as well. They faced the Lions and the Bills, but where are you at with the Ravens?
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit yesterday. My defense is bad.
It's real bad, especially against the run.
Yeah, I would be. I'm gonna cut it down the middle just because the offense is so good. But I mean, they've given up 96 points this year already. I mean, that's on pace with the Titans, who have given up 94, the Dolphins, who have put up 97. I mean, the Bengals, who have given up 91. The Ravens defense has really underperformed, but the offense is so good. Like the next 2 weeks are gonna be a really good test for that. You know, think about like a defense that's given up 41 points to the Bills, 38 points to the Lions, the Chiefs offense who is struggling, then the Texans offense who is struggling. Like if their defense struggles against those teams,
if they struggle against the Texans, look out.
Yeah, I'd be like that. It'd go to a 10.
Yeah, it would go to a 10 I don't know what the point total would have to be for the Texans to say that the Ravens struggled, but like if the Texans. I don't know. Let's just say
if they
score 24 against the Ravens, yeah. I would say panic the F out.
Yeah, it would be panic time.
Yeah, it would definitely be panic time. I'll put. Did you give an official number?
5.
5. Yeah, I'll go in a 5. Just because, kind of like the Chiefs, I think they'll make the playoffs. That's not really a part of the equation. Although the Chiefs game, you know, they lose that and it's on the road. Now you're 1-3, and you do have to have that conversation. But I'll think they make the playoffs. But this might be on the defensive side, which has started off, I think, one of the worst in recent memory for the Ravens. John Lancer pointed out some of those numbers this morning about how, historically, where they matched up with other bad Ravens defenses. But it is getting to the point where you have to think that even if they make the playoffs, that it's so limiting that it really affects their ability to win in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
All right, you want to get so to our rankings here? Or you wanna...
We'll get them on the other side. We'll get to our rankings.
Oh, yeah, we do got to get out of here.
Yeah, we'll get to our where we're looking at these 1-2 teams. We'll rank the 3-0 teams and the 0-3 teams. We'll talk about – look, again, there will be a narrative this weekend amongst some Texans fans. I don't think it will be partaking on this show or this radio station, but there's a realistic chance that coming out this weekend, the Texans will have the same record as the Baltimore Ravens or the Kansas City Chiefs because one of those teams has to lose because they play each other and the Texans play the Tennessee Titans. So we'll get to how we're viewing on these 3-0 teams and the 0-3 teams next here on Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, but before we go to break, let me talk to you about Old Noble Distilling Company, Houston's finest micro distillery. So glad to be back so I could talk about Old Humble Distilling. You know, I was out for the last couple days. Did I miss Joe? Did I miss Jeremy? Did I miss Ryan behind the glass? A little bit, but I mostly miss being able to tell you fine people about Old Humble Distilling Company. So there are hundreds of reasons to stop by their distillery in Humble, mainly because their fantastic whiskeys and cocktails are delicious. But let me add a few more to the list with the many new things going on with Old Humble Distilling Company. So first off, they have new hours. Started a couple weeks ago. More time each day to try out their fantastic spirits. Great thing there. Right now they're open Tuesday through Saturday, 3 to 9 o'clock. So stop by after work and try the Boomtown Bourbon, which is my personal favorite. You must try that when you go by in Old Humble Distilling Company. Plus on Wednesday night, so today, just in a few hours, happy hour all night with $8 cocktails until they close, and trivia joins their lineup on Thursdays starting at 6:30, so make sure you go out and have some fun with trivia at Old Humble Distilling Company. And many more new exciting things will be coming to the tasting room in the coming weeks as well, including us. We'll be going out to Old Humble Distilling Company for live remotes before the end of the year. Old Humble Distilling Company, the official whiskey of campfires, cookouts, good stories, and great friends. Go visit their distillery and tasting room at 19103 Continental Parkway, just off FM 1960, and check out their selection of premium whiskeys at oldhumbledistilling.com. Better yet, you can also grab a bottle at Specs, Total Wine, or Final Retailers. Can't find it? Just ask for Old Humble Distilling Company by name. Try Old Humble Distilling Company because life's too short for factory whiskey.
ESPN 97.5.